You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
A very wise man once said, unwanted pet behavior is a leading cause of pet neglect, abuse, surrender, and euthanasia. That very smart man is actually going to be our guest today, Dr. Roland Tripp. It seems so simple to train a dog or cat to be a welcome member of the family, but that's not always the case. Issues may be with a pet. It may be a bit more tenacious in exhibiting behaviors that are less than endearing. Or the problem could be with an owner that doesn't realize the need for consistent, compassionate training and attention. Any parent who's had more than one child knows that no two children are alike. The same is true for pets. Even if you've had pets for years, each pet presents his or her unique challenges. So today's guest is Dr. Roland Tripp. He's a veterinarian whose passion is ensuring that each pet starts off on the right paw and that both owner and pet experience a loving, healthy relationship. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet Magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet Magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at PetPlanetMagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No. To my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Ladies and gentlemen, Pet Life Radio proudly presents DSPN, the Dog Sports and Performance Network. Get ready to unleash the dog sports enthusiast in all of us. From ski-joring and mushing to racing, agility, and competition. This is the place to learn all about the dog sports and activities that you can do with your furry best friend and canine competitor. So get ready for game time. DSPN with your host, Lori Williams. Every week, on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Tripp, thank you so much for being with us today. This is such an important subject.
Thanks, Bernadine. I'm certainly glad you asked me to join you, and I hope to share some great ideas with some of your listening guests.
Good. Now, most veterinarians, you know, like myself, you go into veterinary school, you learn a little bit about behavior, but basically, you know, I'm trying to figure out what makes them vomit and poop on the floor, and here you've taken it to a whole nother level that's so important. What made you decide to focus on animal behavior as a veterinarian?
Well, as a veterinarian, I went into this business of being a vet because I was so fascinated by the broad swath of things veterinarians can do, everything from zoo vets and horses and so on, So during my career, I did small animal practice and enjoyed that very much. I still do small animal practice part-time, but I was just interested in this idea of what do they think? What makes them do these weird, bizarre things like bite the hand that feeds them and all the things that they do wrong? And so part of it was just interest. Also, I realized that there so many of these animals are euthanized that it was part of my agreement to become a veterinarian, part of my oath to make a difference in saving lives and making a difference in terms of the quality of their life. So I felt that there was nothing bigger than behavior that causes death in small animals. And so between the combination of being interested in it, wanting to make a difference, and enjoying the variety that veterinary medicine offers.
And you're definitely somebody who always enjoys variety. Just a kind of an aside, we'll have your bio up on our webpage, but you have these prospective veterinary students come to you going, oh, I need to go to an agricultural college because I need to have that background. And I always use you as my example of saying, no, I know a veterinarian who actually has a Bachelor of Arts in music. And give us a little bit of your background before you got into veterinary medicine, because I think that's fascinating also.
Well, as a musician, I always wanted to be better at what I did. So when I went to college, they said, well, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I shrugged my shoulders and says, I like playing music. So they made me a music major. And when you're young and you don't know what else to do, so I tried to really delve into music at a deeper level than just playing in a rock band, and ended up with a degree in classical music. But in the long the way, I got interested in philosophy. And so I have a minor in philosophy as well, and that's what influenced me more to go into veterinary medicine. And that's because Socrates taught 500 years before Christ when he lived that the ideal education consisted of a combination of three things. Socrates taught that the ideal education for a human being started in music and then science and then philosophy. So at that time, I was already studying music and philosophy, and I said, you know, I'm two-thirds there. I just got to get me some of that science stuff. And I looked around different sciences, and I became just so fascinated that veterinary medicine, from all of the sciences, from a pure philosophical standpoint, has more perspective on life. In other words, in veterinary medicine, we study life on the physiological basis of everything from fleas to fish to amphibians, every type of mammal. So the perspective on life of just how the body works. And then I became interested in perspective on life from a philosophic background on how thinking varies across all life, and what do snails think, and what do amphibians think, and what do reptiles and birds and mammals and cats and dogs, what do all those animals think, and how's that compared with what we think? So the combination of all that is really where we're at.
And we hear the dog in the background saying, yes, this is what I think right now about you being on the air.
She's telling me right now that someone is coming to the door, and I've told her thank you very much for letting me know. So she's going to settle down now that I've given her recognition that she did her job.
Since this is just the perfect segue, that is something so often where, and I myself, before somebody told me, a behaviorist, that, okay, you have your dog. Somebody comes to the front door, the dog's outside, and I think one of the biggest problems dogs have is barking when they're not supposed to, or we think they're not supposed to, that too often people go, no, stop it, bad, bad dog. Tell us why, really, that dog is not being a bad dog and how we work with it.
Well, we have, as human beings, we've been breeding dogs for a long, long time to do certain jobs. And one of their jobs is guard. And so if somebody comes and approaches the house, whether it's a postman or a burglar, their job is to call the alert. Now, that part is okay. So what I teach clients and people is that the initial barking is okay. It's the question is, if you ask them to stop, will they stop on command? That means recognizing your leadership. So some things people can do, for example, for excessive barking is, first of all, give the dog sufficient exercise so they're not overdoing the one job that they've got. I think having the dog learn to earn, that means giving them jobs like sit and come and down, giving them jobs to do during the day, reinforce your control over the animal's positions, as well as giving them some intellectual ability. So I think having them stop is just like giving them a command. Quiet is like giving them a command to come and sit and down. It just says that they're willing to follow your instructions. But I do think that barking is normal behavior. It's just the excessive, unwanted, after you've asked them to stop, that's what we want to control.
And especially when it's the dog across the street and the neighbors don't have any control over it and you want to. Oh, yes. do something about it. Now, I know one of the things that you have is a service where you will give people ideas, suggestions on how to curb some of the behaviors that they don't like with a pet. And you're able to do this without actually seeing the pet. Is that correct?
That's correct. I support veterinarians throughout the United States with this. Practices that want to offer behavior, and the veterinarians themselves have not studied this particular field but understand how important it is. So I offer to support those practices by the veterinarian asking me to consult by phone with the owner of the pet. So what we do essentially is take the whole process of examining the pet, taking the history, doing the treatment plan, and the follow-up, and we break that into separate categories. So first of all, I only do it upon the request of a veterinarian. The veterinarian must be involved. And then the history can be taken by phone. And all we're doing is asking questions of the owners, and they tell me what's going on. Now, after that has happened, and by the way, it's very fascinating that if you ask the owner and get a lot of information, I think that's as or more important than the evaluation, because during the evaluation, the pet's not doing the stuff you're worried about anyway. So it's artificial when they bring the pet into the exam room, or even if you go into their home, the pet knows you're there. So what I have found the most effective is to use video cameras where the client tapes the animal doing the behavior in the home setting where it really occurs. That way there's nobody in making a difference in the home. I can consult by phone. I have a very large website complete with multimedia training for the owners. So depending on what the concern is, ranging from aggression, obsessive compulsive disorder, obstruction, elimination in the house, barking, etc., depending on what the problem is, we do a detailed history over the phone anywhere in the country, for that matter, anywhere they speak English, actually. And then the veterinarian does an on-site evaluation, and they report that back to me. I've developed a behavioral assessment program, which is a one-page form that the veterinarian does go down and collect. So there is an evaluation of the pet. It's just not done by me because I'm thousands of miles away. So then what happens is if the client chooses to, based on all of that data, the evaluation of the blood work, the physical exam, the behavioral assessment, neurologic exam, and detailed history, behavioral history, put all that together, then I will develop a treatment plan for this custom person in their situation. And then we have behavior technicians who also are located. The technician I work with most closely happens to be located in Missouri, and I'm in California. I have another one I work closely with that's in Florida. This is the new world where it's telecommunications, and so my practice is literally a national practice, and I can work with any veterinarian, with any patient, as long as there's a veterinarian involved who is supervising the case, because the veterinarian locally does all the medical workup, all the tests and treatment and lab tests, prescription of any medications. What I'm focusing on is just the behavior modification and bringing to the veterinarian a veterinary behavior approach where I can discuss the lab work, the medical workup, the prescription, the medications, the Prozacs, if you will, and the pharmacology that affects the brain. I can discuss all that with the veterinarian with a veterinary degree, and I can also communicate with trainers and with behavior technicians. So it's a team approach, and we do really, really high success rates with these very difficult behavior problems.
Dr. Tripp, this is absolutely amazing. I love it. And I know you're close by, and it's one of these things that, I think I need to use your services some more. We're talking right now with Dr. Roland Tripp. He is an animal behaviorist, a veterinarian. We'll be right back after this short message, and then we'll ask some more questions like, why do we need a veterinarian behaviorist? Why can't we just use a dog trainer or a cat trainer? We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly. Right after these messages.
New York, the glitz, the glamour, the exciting Mutt-tropolis, the sparkling kitty city that never sleeps. Join us each week for Pets in the City. With your host, Diane West, celebrity pet sightings, hot events, and news and reviews with the hottest movers, shakers, and tail waggers in New York. So take a bite out of the Big Apple with Pets in the City every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
I'm speaking right now with Dr. Roland Tripp, a veterinarian who also is an animal behaviorist. And Dr. Tripp, this just seems wonderful. And I know some people are saying, well, you know, I've owned dogs for years. I've had cats for years. This is ridiculous. I don't need a veterinarian who's going to do this. Or why can't I just get a dog trainer? Your viewpoint on that?
Well, I think there are certain things that you do need a dog trainer for. Now, let's separate the distinction or difference between a dog trainer and a behaviorist. There is overlap, and there's many people that can do both, but here's what I would use as a definition. A dog trainer works with command response or instruction response, meaning they instruct the dog to do something, come, sit, down, stay, heel, jump through the hoop, go get this materials, whatever. That's instruction response, that's training, and is all happening in the cerebral cortex, which is the upper part of the brain. Behavior modification really has to do, in my definition, with emotional response. So first you've got instruction response, and then you've got emotional response. So by emotional response, I'm talking about aggression and obsessive compulsive and elimination. So it's possible to have a dog that needs training, like they don't come and sit and down. But many of the animals that I work with are terrifically well trained. They'll come, sit down, stay like a champion. But they still bark all night, growl at the kids, destroy the house, urinate, mark, and so on. So I think that most dog trainers who start out learn things like instruction response, but they don't have the expertise. Most of the cases that I deal with don't have within driving range, probably within anywhere that the owner is going to literally drive. They just don't have access to the expertise. My team and I go to all of the major behavioral conferences around the country. We get the latest textbooks, we read all the journals, and we filter through all of that current information, which I think someone with a doctorate in veterinary medicine is probably a little bit better trained to sift through that all that information and assess it. Then what I think is important is the degree in veterinary medicine teaches those of us, you and I, and those who have been blessed to get that degree, we learn how to do this thing called differential diagnosis, and we learn how to think through collecting data, analyzing it, important from the unimportant, and then developing a tentative diagnosis and then a treatment plan. So this process that we go through, this scientific process, is significant. One other thing I'll say is that many animals have mental illness. It's not recognized, but I think it's very true that many of these animals simply have chemical imbalances in their brain, and as a result, they don't think clearly, and they act in a bizarre fashion where they do things like eat their own feces and spin their tail, and they eat things they shouldn't have, and so on. So I think that some of these animals need medications to balance the chemistry in their brain, and in order to prescribe medications, that's requiring a veterinary degree. And lastly, I think there are a certain number of these animals who have not mental illness, they have physical illness, diabetes, renal failure, things of this nature. For example, if they have either of those diseases, they drink excessively to where they can't control it. They urinate in the house just because they have diabetes or renal failure, and the water is going through their body so much they can't control it. So then the owner reports it as house sorting, and the trainer is not going to be able to do anything with that. They can try to house train as long as they want, and they're just up a wrong tree because it's a physical medical problem. So the idea here behind a veterinarian is that what I encourage my veterinarians who are in my network, first, if you have a behavior problem, first, let's make sure it's not a medical problem. Second, let's have a veterinarian behavior consultant evaluate, is this something where we just need to train the dog to do some things differently, or is this where the animal needs significant behavior modification? Then we need learning theory, an understanding how the mind learns new things. And that takes education for that. And there are some trainers who certainly have that education, and they are behaviorists as well. But anyone can stick up a sign and say, oh, I'm a dog trainer, I'm a dog behaviorist. So there's a little bit of professional expertise. That's why.
Definitely. Now, I'm sure there are some people listening right now who are saying, yes, how would you know if a dog has mental illness? And you had mentioned before the break about using doggy Prozac, and people that I've mentioned this to will roll their eyes going, oh, that is absolutely ridiculous. Or it's like, gimme, I don't care, I need a cure right now, and they think the cure is in the bottle. Can you address a little bit about how you're using these medications, what medications these people might be familiar with, and how it really is a little bit different in pets than with people?
Okay, well, first of all, let's start with, is there mental illness in pets? And here, I think the simplest way to divide this is into discerning the difference between unwanted behavior and abnormal behavior. Abnormal behavior is a canine male dog consuming his own feces. That's just abnormal behavior, and it is not a matter of training. It's just abnormal behavior. So a separation anxiety is another example where it's abnormal behavior for the animal to become so frightened just because their owner's left that they end up destroying the house, barking excessively, vomiting, having, you know, physical illness. So I think unwanted behavior is one thing, abnormal behavior is another. Abnormal behavior benefits from medication. The second category of animals that benefit from medication are those who have impulsivity or impulse discontrol, it's called. So some of these animals are so anxious and uptight because of misunderstood punishment, because of lack of exercise, because of lack of training, because of boredom, because of their genetics, for a whole bunch of reasons. Many animals, let's talk about canines, well, actually canines and felines, which is the species that I work with the most. Many of these animals are just so uptight that when we do try to modify their behavior, they can't really learn because they're just so upset. And so the second reason for medication is to chemically, symptomatically remove some of the anxiety and tension so they can learn better, with the idea of phasing the medication out. So some of these animals need medication for life. Others need it temporarily so they can relearn into new habits. So what kinds of medications are used? This is, I think, fascinating stuff because they're basically the same medications used in people. So Prozac? Yep. How about Paxil? Yep. How about, oh gosh, Zoloft and Xanax and all of these drugs, really. So the fact that all these drugs work for similar types of anxiety and phobias and so forth, I think what's fascinating about this is that the very fact that the same medication is used in both species is very clear evidence that both species have similar chemistry. The brains are made up of the same basic stuff, the anatomy, although the anatomy of a dog brain may be bigger in the area of smell than people, and we have a larger prefrontal cortex than them. The size may vary, but the brain anatomy is pretty much right on the same. They're made up of the same thing. The chemistry is the same. So very much more of this stuff than we realize we share with these animals. Now, to those people who say, oh, pshaw, it's ridiculous to give Prozac to a dog, they're simply uneducated and just don't know. It's like saying it's ridiculous to give Prozac to a person. However, for many people, it is a matter of quality of life. So I think that it's a matter of the doctors prescribing it properly and the human beings or animals for that matter. It's not something to be taken lightly, but why not use something that will improve the quality of life when it's there? So I think that's just a matter of becoming familiar with it and getting past the first blush of not understanding.
And I think it's also very important for the listeners to realize that the answer is not just in that bottle. Here you take the pill and all the problems will be solved. Many times I believe that it's an adjunct. It assists you, but it's not always just that answer, especially with things like separation anxiety. So many clients come in and their animals are destroying the house and barking up a storm and realizing that this is the problem. And they say, okay, give me the medicine. I just need to cure this, going, no, that's not going to be the answer. We need to work on this together.
Well, thank you, Brendan, for bringing that up. And I think that's right on the money. There is a tendency to think, oh, it's the cure is the pill. And the pill is simply one part of it. I'm total agreement with you. But, you know, many veterinarians either don't have the education themselves and or don't have anybody within their geographic area that they can feel comfortable working with. So by default, they end up doing just that. They give just the pill. And in some mild cases, sometimes I suppose it works, but that's what I've been doing with my career, is offering this service. Most veterinarians don't know about it yet, but they can have some additional support, not only from me, but there are other people they can use to support them from a distance. So that's the world we live in now, is the opportunity to use communications through phone, internet, email, etc., to be able to support people, veterinarians, pet owners, and trainers, and behaviorists, and veterinary behavior technicians. It's bringing all those people together through a common goal, and that is quality of life.
Now, we are going to have your various website links up on our homepage, but for somebody who's listening right now, pet owner says, okay, I'm in such a locale where my veterinarian, I've been working with them, and my trainer, etc., and I still have this pet with behaviors that just not working. And boy, this Dr. Tripp sounds like the cat's meow. How do they get in touch with you? What would be the website they should look for to give to their veterinarian to say, look, go to this veterinarian, let's work together?
Well, my website is www.animalbehavior.net. That is Animal Behavior Network, and the website animalbehavior.net. It's a collection of veterinarians who are networked together to do this. I also have an 800 number, which is 800-372-3706. And so through our 800 number or through the network of veterinarians, most veterinarians I find are very happy to work with someone like me, because they're still going to do all the veterinary work that what they know how to do, and they just have some additional support. And it doesn't cost the veterinarian anything. I charge the client directly for my consulting time.
That's wonderful, because I know that is an area in which I am deficient. And to go up that learning curve to get where you are, I'm not going to be able to do that. So having you there is great. You'd also mentioned some phobias. And I know a real problem that cats and dogs have is too many times clients will say, you know, every time I go down the street and turn right and about to go into the parking lot, somehow the pet knows. The dog who's been the happy little dog in the car wagging its tail all of a sudden makes the right on the street going, oh no, we're here at the veterinarian's. I know you have ways in which you can try to break down that veterinary phobia. What are some suggestions?
Well, I think prevention first. So before we talk about treatment, let's just say that, again, most veterinarians, and that this is the vet schools, by the way, the vet schools don't teach behavior. They don't teach veterinarians how to handle pets, particularly puppies and kittens, when they're in their critical socialization period. They're not trained how to handle them so that they don't develop this veterinary phobia. So when we say veterinary phobia, let me define that first. It is a syndrome of a behavioral syndrome in canines and felines and probably other species where in the veterinary setting they show symptoms like stress anorexia, refusing food where they would take it at home. They show hyperthermia. Their temperature goes up, but it's not because they're sick. It's because they're stressed. They may panting and drooling. Their heart rate goes up, muscle tension or tetany, and sometimes fear aggression. So,
and they poop and they pee on you, too.
They can fear urinate as well. So if you or I, as a veterinarian, had a patient and we said to each other, I have this patient who is anorexic, hyperthermic, he's tachycardic, he's got tetany, we'd be pretty concerned.
Yeah.
Those are very significant symptoms. And the fact that they occur short-term during the veterinary visit, first of all, is a sign that we in veterinary medicine have not really been handling animals properly, because we create the fear. Animals don't lie. They are doing that for a good reason. So I think the first step is prevention, and that I teach the veterinary hospitals, and I lecture at VMAs about how veterinarians should handle animals differently, much more gently, distract from the injections, do gentling exercises, give treats, fast them before they come in. There's a whole bunch of things that can be done to prevent it. Now, once they have it, now, just like any phobia, it's very, very difficult to get it undone. So the short term is don't make it any worse. That is to say, try to do all those things I just said where you give cookies when they come, at least offer them. But if you're going to do anything painful, even clipping the nails when they're phobic, then give preemptive sedation. In fact, I would suggest that many of these animals will benefit from taking a happy pill before they come to the vet to reduce some of it. Some of them will need to be muzzled as well, but we've got to desensitize them. Many visits with nothing bad happening and a lot of good things happening, that's the basic formula.
It's kind of like me going to the dentist. As a child, it never was a good experience. And finally, as an adult, I can drive myself there. I like my dentist. I get well baby checkups. I get my toothbrush. I'm out the door. And it's like, yes, dentists are not bad people, but I can totally empathize where these dogs and cats are coming from. You'd also mentioned gentling. Now, there's ways that the owners can gentle their pets. And I know you have a website called Positive Pet Parenting. I know you don't have a lot of time. You're rushing off yourself. Can you tell us a little bit about Positive Pet Parenting and where people can learn about that?
Positive Pet Parenting Saves Lives is a nonprofit organization created by my wife, and it is synergistic with Animal Behavior Network. Now, Positive Pet Parenting Saves Lives basically focuses on giving education to animals from shelters. At the moment that the dog or cat is adopted, we give them, they're enrolled in this online e-course where they receive a lesson every week through the emails. And one of the things we teach is gentling, which is a collection of handling techniques that I think veterinarians should do, owners should do, everyone should do these things with canines and felines. Because we humans were primates by nature, and so what we're trying to do is get these animals accustomed to living in our world. These are canids and felids have their own, these are proud members of a different species, and given their own life in the wild, they would behave a certain way. When we humans take them out of that life and put them into ours, in order to call them companion animals, they have a different job. They need to learn different things. So gentling is a series of handling techniques, hugging the pet, for example. That's a primate thing. You don't see canines and felines doing that, but they have to learn to tolerate that very early in life. Massaging, all the things that we do with our pets that make them into good companion animals, we need to do those things when they are very young and build confidence. I want to make one more point here, and that is aggression. Aggression of canines and felines, for that matter, but let's stick with felines. Aggression towards people is the biggest problem in behavior. It's the most common thing I see. It's the most common reason so many dogs are euthanized. It's the most common insurance. It's a big, big deal. And a big part of that aggression in canines against people is because they don't trust people. People will beat them when dogs don't understand it just because they urinated over here or just because they ate that delicious stuff in the garbage, people then come along and suddenly attack them, and the canines lose their trust in people. So gentling techniques and behavior education for the owners are ways for the dog to grow up trusting and being positively focused on people. It's really all about trust, because if dogs trust and see people with respect as leaders in their environment, they are very much less likely to become aggressive. Now, there's some exceptions because of their genetics that are just so difficult to deal with, but most animals, they need to be treated gently when they're little. They need to learn how humans act. That humans need to learn not to punish these dogs when the dog doesn't understand it. If we could get that kind of information, well, that's what Positive Pet Parenting Saves Lives and Animal Behavior Network both do. ABN is through the veterinary practices, and my wife's nonprofit is through the shelters.
Well, I trust that when I call you again and ask you to be on the show that you'll do so, because there's so much information that you have that I know our listeners would benefit from, their animals would benefit from, and veterinarians definitely will benefit from also. So Dr. Tripp has just reinforced the fact that the goal of this show has always been to entertain, educate, and motivate you to be the best pet owner that you can be. So please do go to the sites like Positive Pet Parenting or Pet Centered Practice. Learn more about his services. If you have questions, you can also go to our website and learn about it. You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz on The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio. Thank you so much, and tune again next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.